The first half of the study class on mass conversion will begin in just a few moments. O ye beloved of Baha, this is indeed your day, and this time truly your time. That which is vitally required in this day, and which, like unto a magnet, shall attract divine assistance, is for a large multitude of believers, men or women, old or young, rich or poor, illiterate or lettered, black or white, to arise for the triumph of this cause. Let them all, as one host, arise with love and courage and scatter themselves over the face of the earth. Let them raise the cry of Ya Baha Olabha and rush forth. Well, that, beloved friends, is what mass conversion is all about. Raise the battle cry of Ya Baha Olabha and rush forth. Shall we try the battle cry just once together? Are you ready? 1, 2, 3. Good. Those words, of course, are from our beloved guardian. Words for victory. There are many more to follow. The first half is on this side of the recording. The second half is continued on the other side. This study class is not designed to tell us how to go about teaching the multitudes or how to do the mass conversion work. Many of you already know far more about that than I. And, besides, we have our National Spiritual Assembly and their committees to make certain that we do know how to go about it, exactly how to go about it. These words are to help in every way possible to make certain that everybody wants to participate in the work and will be more encouraged to do so, to stir up action, and to help us avoid some of the mistakes and problems that slowed up or halted the work in other parts of the world. That is the purpose of this study class, nothing else. It is designed to arouse in all of us a feeling of wonder and joy at the beauty, the majesty, and the greatness of our cause, and to inspire us with an eagerness to arise and to rush forth and teach, not just a few individuals or one at a time, but counties, provinces, states, and nations, opening the doors to the multitudes. Now, my suggestion is that we play Stop Me. You know, it's very difficult to listen to one voice over a long period of time. In fact, it's boring. No one has that excellent an attention span. So whenever you have a question about any one of the quotations, or an idea or comment of your own that you'd like to make, stop me. Stop the tape and discuss it. Then begin again. In this way, we can get full participation from everyone, and have a much richer and rewarding study class. This is not a monologue, you know, it's your study class. So stop me at any time you wish and discuss the ideas expressed. You are free, of course, to play it to the end if you wish and then consult, but I think it's usually much more fun and helpful to pitch in your own thoughts as we go along. Okay? Well, so much for the mechanics. Now let's get on with it. Remember, stop me at any time. Whenever we talk about mass conversion or bringing in the multitudes, the first and most important thing to remember is this: that we must allow nothing to prevent our doing just that. The Radiant Army of Baha'u'llah can't stand debating whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, whether the problems involved must make us wary of letting troops into the faith so quickly. That's not our task, no. Our job is just one, and it's clear. Arise, teach, pioneer, sacrifice, contribute, throw wide the doors. The suffering, bewildered, hungry, thirsting masses of humanity can find spiritual guidance that they long for in this day only from us. Therefore, nothing must stand in the path of our winning this victory. Our consultation should not be on how not to do it, but on how we can do it. Right? Therefore, before we begin talking about teaching the masses, we just better find out how important it really is. I suggest we have some infallible guidance on the subject. Huh? Fair enough. Above all, Shoghi Effendi writes, the healing message of Baha'u'llah must, note that, not should, but must be vividly, systematically brought to the attention of the masses in their hour of grief, misery, and confusion. End of quotation. Another, reaching the masses with the message at this time is of the greatest importance, the beloved guardian repeated. More initiative should be shown by all the Baha'is. End quote. Well, why haven't we? I mean, is this some secret love affair we have with the faith that we want to hide from the rest of the world? Sometimes one would almost think so, wouldn't they? The preeminent task of teaching the faith to the multitudes, and I'm quoting the Guardian again now, Shoghi Effendi reminded us, not one of the vital tasks, but the preeminent task, he says. Are you with me? And now I'm quoting again. The preeminent task of teaching the faith to the multitudes who consciously or unconsciously thirst after the healing word of God in this day, a task so dear to the heart of Abdu'l-Bahá, at once so sacred, so fundamental, and so urgent, primarily involving and challenging every single individual, the bedrock on which the solidarity and the stability of the multiplying institutions of a rising order must rest, such a task, he concludes, in the course of this year, must be accorded priority over every other activity, over any other activity. End of quotation. Is every single individual Baha'i in the country participating in this campaign of reaching the masses? Are they? Well, if we're not, why aren't we? The beloved Guardian said of that year 1957, it must be accorded priority over any other activity. One of the last things he told us. Not mass conversation, but mass conversion, as an American Indian delegate to the Canadian Convention once said. Deeds, not words. It's what Baha'u'llah wants. So isn't it about time that we stop fooling around? We have to arise and bring in the multitudes now and make certain that every village, every town, every city in our country, our province, our state has at least one Baha'i, and that that becomes a group, and then an assembly, and then a community, and then all of those disperse and go to other corners of the earth. That a tremendous increase in the number of Baha'is everywhere is rapidly accelerated. The beloved Guardian told us, and I'm quoting now, an effort unexampled in its scope and sustained vitality is urgently required so that the moving spirit of its founder may permeate and transform the lives of the countless multitudes that hunger for its teachings. End of quotation. The beloved Guardian tells us that it would be utterly impossible to over-exaggerate the significance of the faith, or to overrate the influence it has exerted and which it must increasingly exert as its great system unfolds itself amidst the welter of a collapsing civilization. Obviously, those are his words. And on pages 110 through 112 of the Dispensation of Baha'u'llah in the World Order of Baha'u'llah, we hear these marvelous words from the beloved Master. Centuries, nay, ages must pass away, he says, ere the day star of truth shineth again in its midsummer splendor, or appeareth once more in the radiance of its vernal glory. How thankful must we be for having been made in this day the recipients of so overwhelming a favor. Would that we had 10,000 lives, that we might lay them down in thanksgiving for so rare a privilege, so high an attainment, so priceless a bounty. The mere contemplation, he adds, of the dispensation inaugurated by the Blessed Beauty would have sufficed to overwhelm the saints of bygone ages, saints who long to partake for a moment of its great glory. End of quotation. Imagine that, and yet we have it here in the palm of our hands to serve. The holy ones of past ages and centuries, the beloved Master continues, have each and all yearned with tearful eyes to live, though for but one moment, in the day of God. Their longings unsatisfied, they have repaired to the great beyond. How great, therefore, is the bounty of the Abha Beauty, who, notwithstanding our utter unworthiness, hath through his grace and mercy breathed into us in this divinely illumined century the spirit of life, hath gathered us beneath the standard of the beloved of the world, and chosen to confer upon us a bounty for which the mighty ones of bygone ages have craved in vain. The souls of the well-favored among the concourse on high, Abdu'l-Bahá says, the sacred dwellers of the most exalted paradise, are in this day filled with burning desire to return to this world, that they may render such service as lieth in their power to the threshold of the Abha Beauty. End of quotation. Those great souls long burn with desire to return to the world and serve, and yet we are silent and don't shout. We are sitting and we don't move. Can you believe it? Really? That we would bicker and quarrel or frustrate the work of our assemblies or not show up to the feasts or the meetings? That we'd be half-hearted in our teaching effort? Or that we'd say, I'm going to do something really wonderful for the cause of God, but not right now because business is good now, but maybe later on when things slow up you'll see something. Of course, I can't do it now in summer. Ah, but wait until the winter comes and the holiday season is over. Then you're going to see something. Or, I'm going to make a wonderful contribution, give generously. I may even sell something and give the whole thing. Of course, I can't do it right now because business is not only bad, but the stocks are down and my money's all tied up in property. But just you wait till a little later on, then you're going to really see something wonderful out of me. Sure we will. About the same time as the mushroom cloud covers the sky and we say, my God, what have I done with my life and where has the time gone? The saints, the martyrs, the holy souls and heroes and heroines of old, the Master tells us, would give anything to return to this world, to serve Baha'u'llah if only for one moment, to breathe one breath in this day. And look at us. No wonder the beloved Guardian and our Supreme Universal House of Justice keeps telling us we don't understand the greatness, the majesty, and the wonder of the cause and the days in which we live and who we are. Appreciate the value of the days in which you live, for they will come to you no more, and you will never have a like opportunity. Well, I think that should set the tone for the rest of the study class. I mean, what are we going to do about it right now, before this gathering breaks up? You tell me. Let's go back once more to Abdu'l-Bahá's words. The divine charger is impatient and can tarry no longer. Ours is the duty to rush forward, and ere it is too late, to win the victory. What more can I say? What else can my pen recount? So loud is the call that reverberates from the Abha kingdom that mortal ears are well nigh deafened with its vibrations. The whole creation, methinks, is being disrupted and is bursting asunder through the shattering influence of the divine summons issued from the throne of glory. More than this, I cannot write. End of quotation. Isn't it wonderful to be a Baha'i? I mean, what did we ever do to deserve it? Well, maybe it's what we will do after this gathering. Are we intoxicated with the wine of the love of God? It takes a majority of the peoples of the world who are intoxicated with the wine of the love of God to change society, and our job is to get them in a hurry. But this, what we're doing, is a beginning. It might well be the beginning of mass conversion. A pilgrim's note tells us that when the Blessed Master, Abdu'l-Bahá, heard that the entire Burmese village of Kunjangun had entered the faith, he said, it is the beginning of mass conversion. All right. Of course, it was over 50 years before thousands of new believers began coming into the faith on a large scale in Southeast Asia. And so some 50 years were lost there. Are we going to let that happen here, now that it's started? The next few months may tell us the answer to that question. Is it the beginning of mass conversion? Or is it just another one of our skyrockets that suddenly go up noisy and colorfully, spill their treasures to the night, and then fizzle out, and the sky goes dark again? That's up to us. And right here is where we avoid one of the pitfalls that have hampered and sometimes ended the mass teaching work in the past in certain areas. We have to remember that the expansion work cannot be stopped in order to take care of the consolidation. When hundreds and thousands suddenly enter the faith, panic starts in certain areas. The fear that all of these people coming in so rapidly without deepening and training will cause innumerable problems frightens some of the friends. So it is decided that it would be wiser, perhaps, to slow down the teaching work for a while and concentrate on consolidation and deepening. That is a grave mistake. We must carefully and courageously avoid stopping the teaching work among the masses in order to consolidate our victories, or they will no longer remain victories. If we stop the teaching to deepen the newly enrolled friends, we may find, unhappily, that the moment has stopped too. It can't be started again as easily as we think. The joy has gone out of it. There we were, knocking on the door to our destiny, and the troops were beginning to assemble in order to enter the cause of God, and we slammed the door shut because we either didn't understand or were fearful or felt unprepared to face the problems ahead. I remember telling the beloved guardian when I was on pilgrimage from Africa about South Africa, and that if we were able to convey to the friends there the love and spirit generated at his wonderful table, we would have such a flood of new believers that we would be faced with grave problems of consolidation and deepening. He smiled with delight and said, yes, grave problems. He was happy. And the sooner every national community faced such grave problems of how to consolidate the thousands and thousands of new believers, the better it would be, and the happier he would feel. These are problems of growth. And as long as we are obedient to the instructions given to us by the beloved guardian, and now our universal house of justice, under the guidance of our national spiritual assemblies, these problems will turn into triumphs. But the expansion must never be stopped. We must consolidate and deepen as we teach, as the work goes forward, simultaneously, never stopping one or the other, no matter what the cost, no matter what the sacrifice, no matter what the suffering on our part. This is what it means to reach the masses. This is how we redeem a stricken society. It wasn't expected to be easy. It's never easy. Imagine the pilot of a jet plane deciding that his forward movement was too fast, and then instead of carrying on through the clouds, he'd stop all that motion and consolidate his position right where he was in the sky. Well, so much for that. I'm sorry about the dog barking. That's Tokoloshe, our dachshund. That's an African name from Lesotho. It's like a Tilloilenspiegel or a gremlin or a little mischief maker. Anyway, he's anxious to get back to his post, as you can see. And for that matter, so are we. And right here again, I'd like to share with you a basic fundamental principle of mass conversion. Let me say, repeat it again. One which we found works in Africa, India, Latin America, the islands, wherever it is used. And if not used, trouble. This is not my idea. It is from Shoghi Effendi and our Universal House of Justice. And therefore, it's an infallible guidance to us. Ready? It is just this. Mass conversion consists of two parts. Repeat, two parts. Both essential, both harmonious, both simultaneous. Teaching is one of them. Deepening and consolidation is the second. All right, I know I've already said this, but I'll repeat it again because of its importance. And I'll repeat it in a different way, because often, no matter how frequently it is repeated, by the beloved guardian, the Universal House of Justice, our National Assembly, somehow we still don't carry out these instructions in the spirit of equality between teaching and deepening, consolidation. Teaching, you see, is merely finding the place to dig the well in the soil of the human heart. Deepening is the actual digging down into the teachings so that each soul will draw up through the soil of his own heart that pure water of life, Baha'u'llah's principles and laws and teachings. When they do, we can forget those people. That soul, he or she, will be strong and firm and active and will participate in everything enthusiastically. If we don't do it that way, they won't. Those who are most interested in mass teaching must have the very same enthusiasm for and love for deepening and consolidation. It's imperative that they do. Enthusiasm for it, mind you, not just tolerating it and saying, well, teaching is the only thing, but I suppose later on we can deepen them. Enthusiasm for it. Because without the deepening and consolidation, all that early glory of teaching is meaningless. Those who deepen and consolidate, on the other hand, must have that very same enthusiasm for the mass teaching work. Without it, they have nothing to deepen. You know, very often, unfortunately, this second phase, the deepening and the consolidation, that doesn't have the enthusiasm, the enthusiastic support. Sometimes it not only doesn't have it from the mass teachers, it doesn't have it from those who want to deepen because they feel the people weren't taught right in the first place. And occasionally, we have found it also is not there, this enthusiastic support, even among those who have been newly enrolled. Isn't that a pity? They are caught up in the wave of excitement of the teaching and they want to carry it on. Good, that's splendid. But without the deepening, they'll have no fuel to sustain them in their drive. And soon they'll burn out and become empty, disillusioned, feeling that they were deceived in the beginning, and placing the blame on the faith and not on those who gave